The Public Safety Committee will come to order. We do not have a quorum as of yet. We have two items on the agenda today. We'll have a presentation by the Department of Correction regarding prison population projections, or the problems with the prison population projections. For those of you who have had a chance to, if you're not familiar with what the problem is the as I understand it, the projections for commits from the courts is off 8%, meaning that we have a significant problem that the Department of Corrections is going to have to deal with. It could potentially mean that we have an $11 million hole in our budget if the governor does not put money in a supplemental budget for the Department of Corrections. And as I understand it, it also means that we're now renting out beds from our at our county jails, anywhere from 300 to 500 beds. Maybe we'll get some clarification on exactly what that is. There is serious policy and fiscal implications for this committee in that because of these projections and the trends that appear to be happening, in that we may have to consider building another wing on one of our prisons because we can't continue down this road renting jail space from the counties. So I think it's a serious problem. I've asked the department to come and to talk about how they make their projections, why these projections are so, why the projections are so off, and how we might be able to correct that in the future. I have also am going to make a request that the legislative auditor look into this, because I see this as a serious problem for the Department of Corrections as well as this committee, and that if we don't have accurate numbers, we can't accurately budget. And I don't know what the answer is, and I haven't heard a good answer from you all yet on what the answer is, and maybe we'll get a better sense of that today. But I think we need to find out what other states are doing, if other states are doing it better. From what I understand, it's not an easy science. But it seems to me there is something terribly wrong here, and I won't have to deal with it, but who's ever back on this committee next year during the next biennium will have to deal with it. So that will be the first issue that we will deal with, and then I want to give you as much time as you need to go through your presentation and let members ask questions, and then we will have the legislative auditor's report on the evaluation of health services in the Department of Corrections. So, with that, I don't know who, Commissioner Roy, do you want to begin? Do you have any opening comments? Or?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Committee members, good morning. Sometimes when we sit in these chairs, we offer good science. Sometimes we offer opinion. And this morning, I think we're going to offer both good science and opinion about our efficacy when it comes to predicting populations. I am very confident that by the end of the presentation of these 18 slides that the gentleman to my right, Dr. Grant Dewey, our researcher, will present to you this morning, you will have a good understanding, and I think you will have a lot of confidence in the numbers and our ability to project numbers into the future. It is indeed a complicated subject area, but I believe this presentation will enlighten the committee, and it will, again, give you confidence as we go into the future. I know our time is limited. Dr. Grant Dewey has been with our department for a long time. He has great credibility in the criminal justice world. He has published. He is invited to speak at various events all over this country, and was most recently referenced in Judge Frank's decision on MSOP. His research on risk recidivism is substantial, and I think we're very lucky to have him in our department. So I'll turn it over to Mr. Dewey to give the presentation.
Thank you, Commissioner Roy, and good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm Dr. Grant Dewey. I am Director of Research for the Minnesota Department of Corrections. And in that capacity, one of my responsibilities includes helping develop our annual prison population forecasts. So in my testimony this morning, I'll begin by providing a brief overview of our projections process. I'll briefly explain how it's tied to our appropriations process. I'll review the methodology we use to develop projections. Next, I'll present statistics on the historical accuracy of the forecasts that we've done. And then I'll conclude by focusing on our two most recent forecasts. The DOC has collaborated with the Sentencing Guidelines Commission for well over the last few decades to develop annual forecasts of Minnesota's prison population. And although often challenging, the goal that we have in developing projections is a relatively simple one. It's to try to forecast the state's prison population as accurately as possible. We don't try to overproject to give ourselves some budgetary wiggle room. Rather, we try to make sure that our forecast accurately predicts the prison population on the first of each month over the full 10 years of the forecast horizon. Because we use these projections not only for our appropriations process, but we also use these projections for operational purposes. So we develop separate forecasts for both the male and female offender populations. The projections that we do each year, they are used to help calculate the annual forecast adjustment, which is a collaborative process between the DOC and MMB, which takes place every November. The forecast adjustment also takes into account the marginal per diem. Calculations in even-numbered years establish what the DOC's base budget adjustment will be for the next biennium. So, for example, the forecast adjustment that was done in November of 2012 was used to establish base budget adjustments for each year in FY 14 and 15. And then the calculations that take place in odd-numbered years, those are used for forecasting purposes. Those aren't used to make changes to the base budget. So the reason why we've been asked to talk about prison population projections is that the most recent forecast adjustment that was done in November of 2013 indicated that we would need $11 million more in funding for FY15, because our FY13 projections is about $500 less for FY13 than what our FY14 projections indicate. And on the next slide, I'll try to explain that in more detail. Now, some might think that this one-time adjustment that we are requesting for FY15 is unprecedented. However, the truth is that this has happened before, and that there have been times where our projections have affected the biennial appropriations process. Most recently, it was in 2006, where our FY2005 projections overestimated the actual prison population, resulting in prison bed savings. And then before that, in 2004, the DOC requested a one-year adjustment for FY2005 due to FY03 projections underestimating the actual prison population.
And Mr. Dewey, how off were you in those 2 years, and what percent?
Later on in my testimony, I will present statistics that speak to that.
You can't answer the question, you just get it.
I can. Yeah. During the first year of the forecast period, FY03, underprojected by 1.3%. For FY05, during the first year, it overprojected by 1.95%.
And this year?
During the first year of the FY13 forecast, we underprojected by 0.37%.
And where does the 8% come in then?
Well, 8%, Mr. Chair, has to do with the assumptions that we make regarding new court commitment admissions. There's a conflation between the assumptions that we make to develop the forecast versus what the error rate is. And I think as I go through my presentation this morning, that will become clear as I go on.
All right, very good. Thank you.
So this slide kind of provides some detail as to how we arrived at the $11 million. And to kind of clarify this, I think it's important to try to explain, you know, what some of these numbers mean. So the 9,620 number, that is what we projected from our FY13 forecast. That's what we projected the average total monthly population to be during FY15. So this is year three from our FY13 forecast. So FY13 is year one, FY14 is year two, FY15 is year three. So we anticipated that the average total monthly population during FY15 would be 9,620. Our most recent forecast is our FY14 forecast. And we anticipated that the average total monthly population for FY15 would be 10,133. And this is year two from our most recent forecast. So the difference between those two numbers is 513. So when you multiply 513 by the marginal per diem of $59.22, multiply that by 365 days, that's how we get to the $11 million. And later on in my testimony, I will explain in greater detail why we are seeing that difference at 513 between our FY13 and FY14 forecasts for what we anticipate taking place in FY15. So when we do our projections each year, we use a micro simulation model called Structured Sentencing Simulation, or SSS, to project the prison population. This is a micro simulation model that was custom made for Minnesota's correctional system by Dr. Ron Anderson, who is professor emeritus in sociology at the University of Minnesota. SSS could best be described as a deterministic micro-simulation model that uses individual-level data to mimic the flow of offenders through the correctional system. Now,
Mr. Dewey, what does that mean?
Mr. Chair, could you repeat your question, please?
What does that mean, what you just said? Mimic, you just said something I mimics. Went totally over my head.
Mr. Chair, this is it's a simulation model, and so what it does is that.
What does it look at, just in layman's language?
Well, in the next slide, I'll describe in more detail the data that it uses, but it uses admissions data and stock population data, and it uses that data to kind of simulate how offenders move through the system.
Why don't you get to your next slide, and then I'll ask the question again.
Okay. The Department of Corrections, along with Sentencing Guidelines Commission, we validated the accuracy of the SSS model in the FY 2006 and 2007 forecasts that we did. So what we did is we developed projections with our SSS model for both those years, and then we also developed projections with the profit model, which is a micro-simulation model that has been used by the National Council on Crime and Delinquency to develop projections in more than 20 states. And compared to SSS, PROFIT is a stochastic or probabilistic microsimulation model that uses aggregate level data to mimic the flow of offenders through the correctional system. And so when we compared the accuracy between the SSS model and the PROFIT model, we saw that SSS significantly outperformed PROFIT in producing much more accurate forecasts. As a result, that's why we decided to continue using the SSS model in developing forecasts. So as I mentioned previously, SSS uses stock population data, which essentially is a one-day snapshot of the prison population on the first day of our forecast period. And then we also use prison admission data to simulate the flow of offenders through the correctional system. And we use the most recent year's worth of data. One thing that's important to emphasize is that our projections are based on current trends, laws, and practices. That's one of the more important assumptions that we use. But there are also other assumptions that go into our projections process. For example, we make assumptions about the anticipated impact of any new law changes. We make assumptions about what the volume of participation will be in the DOC's early release programs, like Challenge Incarceration Program or Work Release. And then last, but perhaps most important, we make assumptions about what future prison admissions will be. So in developing the assumptions that we make about future prison admissions, DOC and guideline staff, we analyze historical trends, both short-term and long-term, in prison admissions data to develop a series of assumptions that we then test. And guideline staff also share their knowledge about trends in felony-level sentences statewide to help determine those assumptions. And we use different assumptions for the three main types of prison admissions that we see. And the reason why we do this is because there's such different lengths of stay associated with each one. So, for example, with new court commitments, these are instances where offenders are convicted of a felony-level offense, they get sentenced directly to prison. We see that the average length of stay for that type of prison admission is about 3 years, or 36 months. The average length of stay in prison for a probation violator is much less, at 10 months. For a release violator, it's 5 months. So as we'll see later on in my testimony, the new court commitment admissions, because they do have longer lengths of stay in prison, they have an outsized impact on the size of our prison population.
Mr. Dewey, so when do you, I mean, at what stage here when you're looking at new court commitments, I mean, when do you look at the data on criminal behavior, new crimes that have been committed? When do you look at the data on whether the legislature has enacted increased sentences? And when does that factor in here when you're making these assumptions?
Mr. Chair, we make those assumptions every fall when we do the forecast. We start that process in September, and then we finalize the forecast in October. So the assumptions that we make are what we know to be the case in September and October.
Of each year?
Of each year, yes.
So then, am I correct to say that in September that you would, was there an increase in crime? Statistics that would provide an assumption that there would be more commits?
Mr. Chair, are you referring to the crime rate that's reported by the DCA?
Whatever you look at.
Mr. Chair, we in the past, we have relied on prison admissions data, and we've looked at trends in felony level sentences. We have considered using trends and arrests data from the BCA. One of the challenges with doing that, however, is that when you look at the crime rate, there has not been a positive correlation between the crime rate and our prison population. And what I mean by that is that our prison population, as I'll show you later on in my testimony, has significantly increased over the last 12 to 13 years. Most of that increase took place during the first half of the 2000s. However, our crime rate has dropped significantly over the last 20 years. But our prison population has grown quite a bit. So there is not a strong positive correlation between trends in the crime rate in what we see in the prison population.
And is there a correlation between changes that this legislature makes in terms of enhanced sentencing and increases in sentences and your assumptions?
Mr. Chair, yes, that is correct. That changes in sentencing, they can have an impact on the volume of prison admissions. We saw that with the creation of the felony DWI law in 2002, but then also increasing penalties can have an impact on our prison population size insofar as it affects how long offenders stay in prison.
And so I don't think that the legislature has increased sentences on a whole lot of crimes in the last few years. So if you saw that was not occurring, wouldn't that affect your assumptions?
Mr. Chair, it would not affect the assumptions insofar as we would not make that assumption. That we make assumptions only based on what we know. So, for example, we haven't had to make any assumptions regarding the anticipated impact of any new law changes over the last several years. But before that, there were occasions where we did.
So I remember when we increased the meth penalty significantly. So you must have seen that and made an assumption that we're going to have an increased prison population because of that. But you haven't seen that recently, have you?
Mr. Chair, we have not seen that recently. We have not made any assumptions regarding anticipated new law impact changes over our last several forecasts.
Okay, so if crime isn't increasing, sentences aren't increasing, but...
Mr. Chair, actually, when we look at felony-level sentences statewide, from 2006 through 2010, they actually decreased by 13%. Which is about more than 2,000. And later on in my testimony, I'll show you that over that same period of time, male new court commitment admissions to prison remained relatively static. So again, there's a challenge even in using felony-level sentence data to try to establish what future trends might be in prison admissions. Now, one thing that we are considering looking into is using MnJAD court filing information to see whether that might be helpful in establishing what our admissions assumptions might be. We'll try to use that data to see whether it could have predicted the recent increase that we've seen in new court commitment admissions for male offenders. And then also in our forecast over the next several years, we will also try to determine whether that source of data could potentially be helpful.
Continue with your presentation, please.
Prior to finalizing our prison population forecast, we do adjust for seasonality in prison admissions because we do see a seasonal pattern there. And as I mentioned earlier, we develop a series of assumptions, and then we actually develop several rounds of forecasts to test the assumptions that we've come up with. And in finalizing our projections, we will monitor the accuracy of each projection, comparing it with our actual prison population over the first few months of the forecast period. And then we will also compare the forecast output with short and long-term trends that we've seen in the prison population. And then the DOC and Sentencing Guidelines Commission will then agree on a final forecast for the male offender population as well as for the female offender population.
Representative Kelly had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And really, it's kind of along your line of question, because I appreciate the question, and I'm just wondering if we can get maybe a generalization, because if crime is reduced, the population is increasing, and we're really kind of vague of whether it's because of what we've done here, what else is there?
Mr. Dewey.
Mr. Chair and Representative Kelly, could you repeat that last part of your question, please?
Well, I think really making a generalization here, from what I'm hearing you're saying, is crime has been reduced, our population is increasing, what we've done here may or may not have had an impact. So what else is there? Why is the population increasing then?
Mr. Dewey.
And Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that's an issue that we don't fully know yet. That as I'll show you later on in my testimony, that we've taken a closer look at the male offenders coming into prison as new court commits in FY12 and FY13, and trying to figure out why there might be an increase. Is it confined to a few specific offenses? Is it confined to geographical areas of the state? And the truth is that the increase has been across the board for offense types. That there's no, that nearly every offense type we've seen an increase. The increase for the 7-county metro area is basically the same as it is for the 80-county greater Minnesota area. And then even among the counties where we are seeing larger increases, there's no consistent pattern there either. So again, I think in order to adequately try to determine the answer to that question, that one of the things we will need to look at is the data that the sentencing guidelines put together each year, but they're not going to have the 2013 data until later this year after we develop the FY15 forecast. So we will look into that. It's just it's in trying to determine why we've seen this 1 year increase, that's something that's difficult to figure out at this point.
Representative Kelly.
Let's continue.
I think I'll reserve my comments till you get done with your presentation, but I mean, it's you can see why members of this committee would be concerned when you have no clue why this is happening.
Mr. Chair.
And you are the research arm of the Department of Corrections, and we just don't know. And it's so off, and it's gonna $11 million problem that something seems to me broken, and I don't know what it is, and I don't know what the fix is. So maybe you have some ideas. I mean, it just seems to me that the criminal justice system too often operates with silos where people don't talk to each other, and for you not to know what's going on in the court system vis-a-vis any conversations with judicial districts to get a better understanding of why there's more commits during the course of the year, if that's a policy issue, a strategy, problem with that we're not looking at this more strategically. I hope we find the answers, because this is no way to, it's not a good way to budget. I mean, it's not a good way for you, and it's certainly not a good way for us. And if that money's not in the governor's budget, I mean, I already know what you're going to do. You've already told me you're going to cut treatment programs. You're going to cut education out of the DOC. You're going to cut all those things, because staff security obviously is important. We don't want to let go any correctional officers, but that's what's going to get cut. All right, Representative Kelly.
Well, just a clarifying question, Mr. Chair. I guess what I heard Mr. Dewey say, crime rate is down, but offenses are up. That contradictory. Is it a short term issue then, or what are we dealing with,
Mr. Dewey?
Mr. Chair and Representative Kelly. Just because the crime rate is down, that's a much broader measure of crime than what we're actually looking at. That we see thousands of crimes committed within the state each year, but But in terms of new court commitment admissions for males, we see anywhere from 2,000 to 2,500 each year. So it's a much smaller number than just the total crime rate.
Okay.
Representative Stone.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just wanted to clarify with Mr. Dewey. You're doing okay. But are some of the questions that you're being asked going to become, because I see charts and information later in the presentation that talk about a closer look at the increase in new commitments and other things. Are you going to have some of those answers coming up? And I don't know if some of the questions are kind of leading you astray because they're out of order from your presentation, but are we going to get maybe a little more detail as to what they're trying to get at with some of these charts that are coming up in your presentation?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I hope that will be the case.
Okay, thank you. Yeah.
So I think now is a good time to talk about the accuracy of our projections, because there have been some comments made about this year's forecast being so far off, and I think it's important at this point to really clarify what it is that we're talking about when we talk about the error rate. It's simply the difference between our actual prison population and what we project the population to be on the first of the month. It's not the difference between what we assume will be an increase or no increase at all for new court commitment admissions and what we actually see. Rather, this is looking at our actual and projected prison populations, and it's that difference expressed as a percentage. Now, if I tell you that our average error rate, for example, has been 1%, that may not be that meaningful to you. Is that good? Is that bad? So I think it's helpful to put it within a broader context. And so to that end, what I'm going to do is talk about what some of the prison population forecasting literature has indicated the standard to be, but also what other states have actually reported for their error rates. And hopefully by providing you with this context and also showing you what our error rates have actually been, then that can give you a better sense for how accurate or inaccurate you think our forecasts have been. So the literature indicates that an error rate of 2% is the standard. The JFA Associates, which is based out of Washington, D.C., they've developed projections for a number of states over the years. They consider an error rate of 2% or less to be an acceptable accuracy difference. The state of Oregon, 2% or less, is their forecast performance target. In 1996, the Government Accounting Office prepared a report on prison population forecasting at both the state and federal levels, and their report concludes that forecasting models are generally considered reliable if the projections come within 2% of the actual populations. So 2% then is the standard. One other thing that's worth noting is that accuracy tends to decrease as the time horizon increases. So, for example, our one-year forecast will tend to be more accurate than, say, a two-year forecast or a three-year forecast or a five-year forecast. This is a problem that's not unique to prison population forecasting. We see it with weather forecasting. Today's forecast of the weather will probably be more accurate than today's forecast of what the weather will be tomorrow, or what the weather will be like on Saturday, or what the weather will be like on Sunday.
Representative Ward, sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So could you know, the standard that you said is 2% or less, correct?
Mr. Dewey.
Mr. Dewey?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, that is the standard that others have set.
Okay. So, Mr. Dewey, could
Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Mr. Dewey, do you know, I didn't see it in anything that I was looking at forward here, how many states are above the 2% standard, and how many states are, I mean, you have one state that you've referenced here, Oregon. And you referenced that we in Minnesota are at, I think you said average 1%, correct? So how many states are at the 2% above that, or how many are below that? And let me just ask that simple question right now.
Mr. Dewey.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'll actually address that in this slide.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Most but not all states develop projections of their prison populations. Some departments of corrections do it themselves. Others have it done for them. Not all states provide some type of report on their prison population projections, and fewer still report on their accuracy. However, what I've compiled here are those states that have provided some indication of the accuracy of their projections. And most projections are done on an annual basis, so they have a shelf life of 12 months. So that's why you see when most states talk about error rates, it's during the first year. That there have only been a few states that talk about their error rates beyond the first year. But what we see from the first year error rates is anywhere from 0.7% to greater than 2%. You can kind of see why 2% is the standard, because you know it's a challenge to get it under 2%. You see the National Council on Crime and Delinquency, in the projections that they did in more than 20 states, their average error rate was 2%. In Colorado, we see that the error rate was greater than 2% for 6 of the 8 years during the forecast they did from 2001 to 2008. And then most recently in Connecticut, their forecasts were off by more than 2% in 2012 and 2013. And then as I just mentioned, as the time horizon increases, accuracy decreases. We see that with Virginia's forecast. We see that their first year error rate was 1.3%, but then their 2 year error rate grew to 3.3%, and then by year three, it was off by almost 5%, a difference of almost 1,700 offenders. And then in West Virginia, their 2007 forecast was off by more than 10% after 2 years, and by more than 20% after 3 years. So in this slide, I present the first year error rates that we've seen from our last 13 prison population forecasts. The bars on the left-hand side, those are projections where we underestimated the actual prison population, and then those forecasts with bars to the right side indicate where we've over-projected. And one thing that's clear is that the accuracy of our forecasts have increased significantly over time. When we look at the 2001 to 2005 period, we had an average error rate that ranged anywhere between 1.3 and 3.3%. In fact, for the 2001 to 2006 period, the average error rate was about 1.93%. That was pretty close to the industry standard. However, since 2007, our average error rate during the first year has been 0.62%. As you can see from the last slide, the lowest error rate that I could find was the 0.7% reported by JFA Associates for a forecast that they did for the state of Nevada. But that was only through the first 9 months. That wasn't even for the first 12 months. And then even, you know, one thing that's worth noting is that for the forecast we did in 2009 and 2010, the accuracy was affected by the repeal of the short-term offender law, which was in place from 2003 to 2009, where offenders at the time of sentencing, if they had 180 days or less to serve, they spent that time in a county jail as opposed to state correctional facilities. So that law was repealed after we prepared the 2009 forecast, and at the time it was repealed, it was only a few months later that we developed their 2010 forecast. So we weren't quite sure how the system was going to react to that. So if you exclude those two forecasts, our average error rate since 2007 has been 0.38%.
Mr. Dewey, can I just ask in terms of the chart? So these are the percentages part of the monthly errors, either going forward or backwards?
Mr. Chair, it's the average
monthly.
It's the average difference on a monthly basis.
Okay, so in month 8, when you're at, let's say, 1.95%, correlate that? Why don't you correlate that with your original forecast in November? I mean, if it's on a monthly basis, I could see how the variations would be relatively minor. But if you were off significantly, like you are this year, it would seem to me that rather on a monthly basis, you'd look 8 months or 9 months into your forecast, and go back to the original forecast, and you probably wouldn't be at 1.95%, if you understand the question.
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure that I fully understand the question, but I think as I go forward, I think I can clarify
okay.
that
Very
issue
good.
To some extent. But one thing that's worth noting is that the first year error rates for our most recent for our most recent budget year forecast, you'll see at the top, is 0.37%. That's during the first year. Now, when we develop a forecast during a budget year, that we look at the accuracy of that forecast really over a three-year period. Because as you recall, that 513 offender difference, which is the difference between our FY13 and FY14 forecasts, that's for fiscal year 15. So that's for that 3 years out for our FY13 forecast, that's 2 years out for our FY14 forecast. And so this next slide kind of shows you how we've done with the last four budget year forecasts that we've completed. Fiscal year 2007, 2009, 2011, and then 2013. And so the fiscal year 2007 forecast, as you can see over the whole two-year period, it was very accurate up until the last few months. The fiscal year 2009 forecast, its accuracy was affected by the repeal of the STO law. The FY 2011 forecast, you see, was right on the money for the full 2 years. In fact, by the end of the two-year period, our actual prison population was only 33 off from what our projected prison population was. And this is using using the same process then as we use today. And so for FY13 forecast, we see that it was very close during the first year. But during the second year, that's where we begin to see a deviation between our prison population projections and what our actual population is. We're seeing our actual population grow higher than our projections. And so for the balance of my testimony, I'll focus on explaining why that's the case. This slide shows the trend in the prison population that we've seen since 2000. There's been a 56% increase. Most of that increase, however, occurred during the first half of the 2000s. That we've seen relatively minimal growth since then, aside from that short-term bump that we saw in 2010 due to the repeal of the short-term offender law. Most of the growth that we saw during the first half of the 2000s was due to the meth boom, as well as the creation of the felony DWI law. But as the meth boom went bust, and as the number of DWI admissions began to plateau, we started to see that growth taper off. And we would have seen very, very minimal growth from 2008 to 2012 if it weren't for the repeal of the STO law. But even with that, we still saw an increase of only about 40 offenders per year. Now, one thing that's worth noting is that since 2013, we have seen a sharp increase in the size of the male offender population. That it grew by 319 during calendar year 2013. That's the largest one-year increase that we've seen since the 411 offender growth that we saw at the height of the meth boom in 2005.
And Mr. Dewey, the reason for that, are your assumptions here, is that coming up?
Mr. Chair, it's okay. In this next slide.
Okay.
So why the recent increase for male offenders? And a large part of that is due to the fact that that we saw an 8% increase in new court commitments from FY12 to FY13. When we were preparing our FY13 forecast, we assumed, or we did not anticipate, that 8% increase. And there are a few reasons why. One is that the increase in male new court commitment admissions, that did not begin until a number of months after we had actually completed our FY13 forecast. That's one reason why you see our forecast is so accurate during the first year, is that we didn't see that increase. It did not begin to diverge from our projected prison population until year two. And the second reason is that the number of new court commitment admissions that we saw was very stable from 2008 to 2012. This slide, the blue line, shows the number of new court commitment admissions for males each year from FY13 to FY7 to FY13. And you can see that there's a flat blue line from 08 to 012 or to 2012. And those numbers range between 2,615 to 2,658, so within a very narrow band of 43 offenders. So when we prepared our FY13 forecast, we did not have that 2836 number to look at. Instead, we were looking at 5 consecutive years of zero growth. When we make assumptions about future prison admissions, we have to make conservative assumptions. We have to hedge our bets. Because if, for example, we were doing a budget year forecast in FY11 and we saw 3 consecutive years of no growth, but if we had a hunch that it might increase by 8%, but then it stayed flat, then we would have overprojected significantly. So at the time we were doing the FY13 forecast, we did not have the benefit of this hindsight that we do right now. So when we developed our FY13 projections, we assumed that it would continue to have very little growth. But you know, one thing that's worth noting is that, you know, even through February of this year, the average monthly error rate from our FY13 forecast is still under 1% for our male offender population. It's just that because of this increase in new court commitment admissions, and as you recall, these are the offenders who have longer lengths of stay in prison. They stay on average about 3 years. So if we see an increase in new court commitment admissions just for 1 year, that's going to have an impact on the prison population over several years because of those longer lengths of stay. And so, as I mentioned earlier, we have looked into these new court commitment admissions, and you know, why is there this increase from FY12 to FY13? And as I mentioned, that it's not confined to a specific type of offense. It's not confined to a specific geographical area of the state. If it were, that would be much easier to explain. But the truth is, it's been across the board. Even when we look at our top 5 counties with largest numerical increases, Ramsey had the most with 97. Most of those offenses that we saw that were responsible for the increase were weapons offenses and VOFP and Danco offenses. In St. Louis County, person offenses were responsible for most of the increase. Otter Tail, property offenses responsible for most of the increase. And then in Scott and Douglas, it was meth. So again, we see this variation that's kind of across the board that makes it more difficult to explain. That if it was just for meth offenses, then we could tie it to meth or to sex offenses or something else.
So Dr. Dewitt, can I just ask about the back that chart on male admissions earlier? So when you see sort of a flat line, no increases, so is there some grand assumption that it's going to always be that way? I mean, how does it? I mean, it can't stay flat. So don't you see, after several years, don't that, I guess that would be the first question I'd have. And then, again, I hearken back to something I've asked you privately as well as publicly, is about the, is there ways for the Department of Corrections to communicate with our, with the court system in a better way to get a sense of why there's more court commits in a given year, or in your monthly tracking, that would give you better data so that we wouldn't have this sort of aberration?
Mr. Chair, we intend to look at the MnJAD court filing data that the courts compile to see whether that would be helpful in trying to determine the number of new court commitment admissions into prison, to see whether that information could have actually predicted this increase that we saw, and whether it would be helpful in refining the assumptions that we use in our upcoming forecast. But to answer your first question, we make admissions assumptions for each of our three main admission types over each year of the forecast period. So generally speaking, what we will do for our first and second year admissions assumptions is we will focus more on short-term trends because they tend to be more predictive of what's going to happen in the short term in the future. But then we also look at long-term trends in prison admissions, as well as trends in statewide felony sentences to help identify what our longer-term assumptions will be. So we don't, for new court commitment admissions for males, we don't assume it's going to be 0% from year 1 through year 10. Instead, it could be 0%, but then we look at the historical average and assume that maybe years 3 through 10, it could be 1% or 2% per year, which is closer to what we've actually seen.
Thank you.
So on this last slide, indicates where we've been in terms of our actual prison population, and then to the right, you'll see the difference between our FY13 and FY14 forecasts. And as you can see, the FY13 forecast that we did was only off by one on July 1st, 9,773 versus 9,772. And then you can see that the blue bar is our most recent FY14 forecast, and this is why we are asking for additional funding for FY15, because we anticipate that our prison population will be higher than what our FY13 forecast had indicated. And we think our FY14 forecast is more accurate because it uses more recent admission data. It captures that increase that we've seen in new court commitment admissions. And so that's factored into our most recent forecast that we've done.
Representative Schoen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, Doctor, does the prison population increase mirror the Minnesota population increase by percentage?
Dr. Dewey.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, it does not. The prison population growth has significantly outpaced the increase in population for residents within the state as a whole.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Schoen.
Commissioner, for me, and I'm not going to speak for everybody else here, I'm not completely comfortable. I have a strong grasp as to why you've given, what information you've given me tells me why this is happening, and I still think that's a very important part of this conversation as to why we're having that increase, because I think that if you have that information and you can give us something that's a telling projection, there's probably other things that we can do within our purview to mitigate this in the future. Into other areas of public safety and judiciary as a whole. But this was a lot of information, and it was pretty choppy for me. Again, I'm not speaking for everybody here. I need a little bit more condensed to probably not dilute what we're trying to get to. And I'm not trying to be overly critical, but to get to the point of why is a pretty big deal. And I got that you need it and that you feel you need it. I completely understand that. And I probably need a little bit more information about what our costs are between if we were to go to the county jails. And I'd have to talk to my county to see, are they depending upon some of this? Did they build with this projection? Because the state at one point in time asked, because I know that happened, that maybe have happened in your area, Representative Ward, where the county jails were asked when they were doing building projects by the state that they needed extra capacity, and how will that affect them as well, too? So I think that's going to be a pretty important piece of the...
Do you have a specific question, or
Well, I want to get that information as well too, but I'd still need a little bit better clarification as to why, and maybe some recommendations as to what we could do to help mitigate that. That's, and if they have some input,
that's a good segue, Dr. Dewey. Do you have some recommendations,
Mr. Chair and members of the committee? I think it's worth considering the increase that we saw from FY12 to FY13. To consider it within a broader perspective, that for the first 6 months of FY14, the number of new court commitment admissions for males has been in about the same number as it was for the first 6 months of FY13. So what we have observed may be somewhat of an anomaly. That if you look at this slide, for example, you'll see that we had an increase from FY7 to FY08. But then we had 5 years where we had no growth. So we could have a very similar situation where we had a one-year increase followed by 5 more years of no growth. So, I mean, on the one hand, I definitely agree with you. It's important to understand why that increase has taken place, but also taking it within a broader perspective that, you know, this could just be a one-time increase that we've seen, but that's still important because even if our growth is flat over the upcoming 5 years, we're still seeing more new court commitment admissions than what our FY13 projections would have indicated.
Dr. Dewey, so if there's 300 to 500 beds that are needed, is that accurate, Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, that is accurate.
So you're just so we're getting this on the record, so you will be renting space from the counties?
Mr. Chair, we are currently renting, yes.
Okay, and do you have the resources to rent the space from the counties?
We do not have those resources.
We do not have that, okay. And if the money, I just went on the record, and if the money is not in the supplemental budget, what is your contingency plan?
Mr. Chair, committee members, we are developing contingency plans, but as this committee remembers under the previous chair as well, that we have said in every presentation in front of this committee, our short-term strategy is to rent jail beds rather than get into a big capital expansion plan. And with over 2,000 vacant jail beds around the state, we think that is a cost-effective way to deal with a population that we have no control over. The people that walk in our door are ordered to us, and
I guess I'm trying to get at, Commissioner, is if you don't have the money to rent the beds, what is your plan?
Our plan is, as it is always, is to examine our budgets and locate areas that we can adjust, and right now all of our prisons are really challenged to deal with their current budget. We hope we did get through 2013. 2014 is going to be a challenge for us. This projection increase for us is not totally unanticipated. I'm very thankful that I'm here in Minnesota and not in California, where they have dealt with a 25,000 bed overage now currently going to their county jails. We also have a working group right now in terms of a long-term plan. We're looking at our various prison venues that may be appropriate for actual building expansion, but it would be very premature to discuss those long-term capital at this time.
Thank you, Representative Kelly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Dewey, I just have two questions, and one is on these increase in commits, and if these numbers are even more dramatic, if we're talking about a decrease in the crime rates and an increase in the commit rates, are these even more dramatic if you're just measuring them year over year? because of that? What I'm getting at is are the trends in the court system is something more that we have to deal with than we actually are looking at with these numbers.
Doc, Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kelly, I would strongly recommend to get a feel for the court flow. The Minnesota Sentencing Guidelines comes out with a very comprehensive report to the legislature that was just released a couple months ago, actually, January 15th. And it has some similar bar charts that shows new felony sentences, and it is a very comprehensive report that will give all members a really good view of what's happening in the court system. The question that was asked earlier about how can we explain increased crime? I wish I had an explanation for increased crime. We have a more professional police force. We have a more professional prosecutorial force. We just generally have a very efficient criminal justice system, and it provides us with more bodies than we have capacity for right now. And I wish I could say that as Commissioner of Corrections, I had control over all those other elements, but unfortunately we don't.
Dr. Dewey.
And Mr. Chair and members of the committee, just to follow up on Commissioner Roy's comments that in terms of trying to get a better handle or feel for, you know, why we saw the increase in FY13, and it could be something as simple as we're seeing an increase in new court commitments, not necessarily because the severity of the offenses have increased, but it could have to do with the criminal histories of those who've committed those offenses. However, that's information, when Guidelines puts together their data, it takes them a long time to clean the data and to have that criminal history information. That's not information that we have, that we have the luxury of having at the time we do the forecast, because the 2013 data aren't going to be available until later this year, and we're going to have to put out our FY15 forecast later this year in October. So there's an issue of timeliness that could potentially help us in developing admissions assumptions, and in terms of trying to figure out why we've seen this increase and why it deviates from the crime rate and so on from FY12 to FY13. But again, it just goes back to what I said at the outset, that accurately predicting the size of the prison population is often challenging. But we try to do the best we can, and I think the statistics that I've showed you regarding the historical accuracy show that we have a very sound fundamental process in place. It's the same process that we use to produce an FY2011 forecast that was right on the money with the actual prison population. Same goes for FY2007 budget year forecast. That the issue with the FY13 forecast is that we were not able to anticipate this increase that we've seen in new court commitment admissions, because that increase did not begin until after we had completed the forecast.
Representative Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Commissioner and Mr. Dewey, you both mentioned long-term solutions as well as I heard Representative Kelly and others talk about that. And, you know, Representative Kelly, go ahead.
No, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Unless you weren't done, I'm sorry.
Go ahead. Well, thank you, Representative Ward. Yep. Mr. Chair, since you mentioned criminal history scores, that was one of my follow-up questions. So do we track the average age of new commits? Is that getting older then, so that these criminal history scores really are starting to have a bearing?
Dr. Dewey.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, offender age was another thing that we looked at, and not much of a difference between FY12 and FY13.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Ward, sir, I'm sorry. I was not paying attention.
Yep, thank you. And, you know, I'm interested in just kind of a brainstorming a little bit about a long-term kind of solution, because when we, you know, we're 300 to 500 beds short, $11 million fiscal problem, as I understand it, if I hear that correctly and see it and read it correctly. And, it continues, our cost to Department of Corrections, continue to rise, you know, always. They just seem to continue to rise, and I think a lot of it has to do with the population and things as such. You know, and I worked in corrections a little bit, and one of the things that I've always talked about or thought about is, and you know what, the other thing that Representative Paymar brought up is really important. So we have $11 million problem. What do we do with that? Do we cut education? Do we cut treatment, which are the programs that we try to have to rehabilitate our prison population to be productive citizens? So now we become, a place where we just put people, and then they get out, and if they're not rehabilitated, they reoccur crime, and then our population grows again, and then their age gets older or whatever. So I really, really hope that we don't do that, Mr. Chair, that we don't cut the commissioner, that we don't cut those programs that make a difference in maybe getting our prison population into productive citizens in the state of Minnesota. But the thing that I wanted to talk about is, have you considered, you talk about long-term planning and long-term goals, have you thought at all about a geriatric unit in compared to, so in our prison population, Representative Kelly just asked about, you know, is our age, what's the aging, do we have an aging population? And years ago, not that many years ago, I was asking that we look at that, because there are state buildings sitting there that could be easily turned into secure geriatric units for patients with that are immobile, that have dementia, that have Alzheimer's, that are prison population, that maybe could be taken care of in a different facility, a secure facility, but a different facility that may be more cost effective and help in that fiscal problem that we have. So have you thought of that at all? Is that part of the dialogue and discussion?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative Ward, there may be another significant population in the state of Minnesota that needs those particular facilities that are under the auspices of another department, and that MSOP program may need those facilities. We currently have in our Faribault facility, our Linden unit, which is actually a unit for the infirmed and age-challenged people. And actually, I spent the morning there yesterday morning talking to a 77-year-old offender who has been in for 26 years and is going to have a parole hearing on Monday. And that particular unit has the majority of those people either with significant physical problems or age dementia problems.
Representative Ward.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess that answers that. Is that unit always full, Mr. Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, Representative, it is always full.
Before we go to you, Representative Cornish, Mr. Alter, I don't want to short. This was an important study that the legislative auditor did, and I'm just wondering if I did this to members yesterday. I don't want to do it again today and go over our committee time. So, I don't want you to have to rush through it, and I know it's more than a 15-minute presentation.
We can either boil it down for you to something very short, or you can have a snack or whatever you prefer.
Members, yeah, I think so, because I think this is a really serious problem with the healthcare issues, and I just would, if you fly through it, we're not going to be able to ask you questions, and if you don't mind, I apologize. I should have known that this would take longer than it. Okay, very good. So Representative Cornish, you're next.
Mr. Chair, and whoever would want to answer it, the commissioner or the doctor, have you had talks with the Sheriff's Association? How are we sitting on state law as far as forcing them to take it if they don't want to take it, or if the reimbursement rate isn't enough if we send them to the county jails? And what kind of conversation have you had with Director Franklin about that? And are they going to put the squeeze on to renegotiate the reimbursement rate, or can you just say here they are, and how many counties are going to rebel against that?
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, Representative Cornish, Assistant Commissioner King is sitting behind me, and he's presently in negotiation with a number of county sheriffs, and I don't know if he's prepared to discuss in detail and given the time. If he responds to you with that information about our contract sheriffs that we currently have and the rate that we're currently paying, would you be satisfied with that?
Well, to the chair.
We have time now if you would like to. I don't want to cause any problems with negotiations as long as he can tell us what he can tell us.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is John King. I'm the Assistant Commissioner for the Facilities Division. Presently, we have 317 offenders in our county jails. I have the breakdown. If you want me to go through it quickly, I can. We pay $55 a day to all the counties in Minnesota at this point in time. We are getting squeezed by some of the counties. They are working towards renegotiating our contracts. We've held the line because we're concerned about the amount of money that we're renting. We're renting 145 beds from Sherburne, 57 from Steele, 43 from Crow Wing, 19 from Kennebec, 15 from Meeker, 18 in Washington, 6 in Scott, and 14 in Goodhue. Does that help?
Representative Cornish.
Oh, yes, it does. I just hope that the future, what's our plan if they, can they say no, or what's your authority as far as they say, well, either give us 75 or we're not taking them?
So, Assistant Commissioner King.
Mr. Chair, sorry.
Yeah, no. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, if we get a dead end from a county, we're just continuing to go down the list to find a county that's willing to accept our offenders at the $55 a day rental fee. So we've asked for counties that have vacant space to consider it. Many of the counties are saying we are looking for a guarantee. We've been reluctant to issue a guarantee, so we're just continuing to work with counties that are willing to accept the $55 a day amount. So there is capacity, and there are counties that are interested in our contracts. We're trying to get to counties that are in our transportation corridors so that we aren't traveling all over the state, you know, expending state dollars unnecessarily.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Cornish.
The answer to the question then, you haven't answered it yet. If we can say, here they are, you have to take them, what's our statutory authority, or can they just say no?
Commissioner King.
Mr. Chair and members, I don't believe that we are able to say, here they are, and there you go. I apologize for being obtuse. No.
And Commissioner, so, and maybe Dr. Dewey, this is for you. I mean, I thought that the 317 number, that's today, but I thought some of your projections were that it could increase as high as 500, maybe 700, or am I off on that?
Mr. Chair, which number are you, or what does the 500 to 700 refer to?
Beds that will be needed that we don't have capacity at the Department of Corrections. Or what is your... Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, members, our projections indicate that on June 1st, we'll need 566 adult male beds, that on June 1st, we'll need 566 adult male beds, and at the end of the fiscal year 15, which would be June 1st of 2015, we'll need 781 jail beds.
So, Commissioner, so now we're talking 566 by June, so, and do you believe that we'll have enough space in our county jails to accommodate those inmates?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, absolutely. At this point in time, I'm not concerned that we'll be able to rent 581 beds from our counties at the $55 a day rate.
Okay. Very good. And Commissioner, are they getting treatment or any programming that they would get in the DOC facility?
Mr. Chair, it's limited. There are counties that are willing to provide some treatment. Primarily, it's educational opportunities, but really not sex offender or drug and alcohol treatment at this point in time. So if those counties offer those programs already, then we will, of course, continue to send offenders there. And that's one of the things that we're trying to do with the excess capacity is to work with counties that do have some programming, whether it's educational or drug and alcohol treatment. That's our preferred method because, of course, it works well for transitioning our offenders back into the community.
Okay. Other questions, Representative Kelly?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And first of all, Dr. Dewey, I'd like to apologize somewhat because I think my first line of question, if I would have listened to your entire presentation, would have clarified a number of things for me. So I apologize for that. But back to this criminal history scores, one of the things I'm wondering is about just our technology and our information sharing. Have we done any tracking in regards to when things came online as far as like CrimNet or the information sharing that we've been doing between the court system and the, you know, everywhere else as far as lining up these history scores?
Dr. Dewey.
And Mr. Chair and Representative Kelly, that information is available. I don't have it off the top of my head, but I think we could prepare a response that addresses your question, if that's okay.
Sure, that's fine. Just trying to also, you know, try and get an understanding of I think other things that have been trying to or that have been working in the background that are maybe just all coming to fruition at the same time as far as the sharing of information. I think one of these things, the criminal history scores, is one that might just be catching up with us. Thank you.
President Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. King, thank you. Two questions for you. I heard you say that we have a need of 500 beds as of this June, and then I heard you say that we have around 700 need in the following fiscal year. Is the 700 an additional 700 on top of the 500, or is it 200 more?
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair and Representative Ward, so that's the total number. So it would be an additional 200. So it would be 566 followed by 781, so yep. 215.
Thank you. And, Mr. Chair.
More.
So, and then I heard you say if the counties have treatment and education services, they're provided with the counties that we rent from. Correct?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair and Representative Ward, not all of the counties that we are renting beds from do provide education and or sex offender treatment programs. Some do, and those are the preferred counties that we're attempting to contract with. But they're not willing to, the counties that we've dealt with and the counties that are out there have not been willing to start programs for us. What they're essentially saying is we'll take your offenders and we'll continue to provide our level of service, whatever that is. Does that help?
Well,
Representative Ward.
Okay, so tell us please, the number of counties that are willing to do that, the number of counties that you know offhand, the number of counties that are willing to provide those services to the inmates?
Commissioner King.
Mr. Chair and Representative Ward, not at this time.
Okay. Can you get us that information, please?
Thank you. Representative Simonson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is kind of a follow-up to Representative Ward's question, but I just want to really, truly understand. So when you talk about renting beds from the jails and the counties that have programming available, is there a process where you actually take the inmates and match their needs with the jail facility that you put them into?
Commissioner King.
Mr. Chair and representatives of the committee, that's correct. So what we do when we have our screening criteria is we attempt to get offenders on a couple different criteria. One is the area of the state that they are going to be released to. That's an important component for us because we want to make sure that there's visiting abilities and that there's also an easier way to transition them as well as get visitors in. The second part of it is if there are treatment options at those counties, we will try to send those offenders there, whether it's an ABE educational program or a CDSO program.
Mr. Chair.
Simonson.
Thank you, Commissioner. And just one last question. So is there any instances where you've got inmates that are transferred out to a jail facility that are in need of treatment that are not currently getting treatment?
Mr. King.
Mr. Chair and representatives of the committee, absolutely. We are not able to, at this point in time, deliver treatment to all of the offenders that we have in our prison system. Primarily what we're looking for with our offenders that we ship to the county jails are offenders that have either failed treatment that they have been release violators or return violators in the past. So they're typically offenders that are low risk of getting, it's unlikely that they'll get treatment in our facilities. And so essentially we're looking for a bed. You know, our goal is primarily to find space for people, and then our preferred method is to have those offenders that need treatment or educational components get treated in our facilities.
Professor Cornish.
Mr. Chair, I think this is going to be very problematic because in my experience as a jailer, if somebody came from the prison back to the jail, they went bonkers. They didn't like it. There wasn't half of the things to offer that they normally had in the prison atmosphere. And then thinking ahead to our hopes that on the sex offender transition or what we would like to do with it, some of us would like to have their treatment done in prison, which corrections the sterilists they could do and have been doing for years, and we have put somebody like that, that we want treatment that is happening in prison, send them back to the county jails that they're not staffed for. I just see all sorts of problems here with the prisoners coming back from a state facility to a jail and that upsetting them and then those behavioral problems acting out there. So I just think it's a big problem.
Commissioner Roy, could you come back up? Because we're just going to, I want you to make a couple of closing comments because I want to make a closing comment also. But first, can I need a motion to approve the minutes of February 26th. Representative Simonson moves. And he's, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed? That motion prevails. So, Commissioner Roy, Dr. Dewey, I know you have been on the other side of my frustration, and I don't know what to do about it except to say that I remain frustrated. I appreciate the presentation. It was very informative. It gives me a better understanding of how you conduct your research, but I guess I still am not convinced that this is sound fundamental process as you quoted, and I don't know what a sound fundamental process looks like, but this, for a fiscal committee that has to construct a budget, we are in a real bind, and I don't know what to say about that as a policymaker, except that we're ultimately responsible, and you are. And so I would like to hear, I appreciate that you're looking at some other ways of getting input into this data through MnJG, if annual projections, I don't know what. I guess what I would like to see from Commissioner is a list of recommendations of what you might do to improve this system in the future, so future legislatures won't have to be confronted with such a the consequences of as you say, an anomaly. Because an anomaly is real people, it's real problems, and it's real money. So, Commissioner, I guess I'm asking for those, if you can provide recommendations, if when you can do that, and if you have any closing comments.
Mr. Chair, thank you. We continue to have confidence in this process. In any human endeavor, there's always room for improvement. We will strive to get the best information possible to improve those outcomes and prediction. But I believe the numbers and the standards that were referenced here today and our performance against those standards should indicate to the committee that we are, in fact, producing a high-quality prediction over the long course of time of what our prison population is. I would be foolish to sit here today and say that new sources of data, the information sharing that may be available with law enforcement or the courts or other systems may add to our efforts. And I wouldn't be so foolish, and we will continue to look at those.
Final question, Commissioner. Yesterday during the overview by the Sentencing Guidelines Commission, are some of these numbers, I mean, can you just say real quickly, do they have to do with drug offenses, the spike in prison population? And are we going to see looking at your projections, more significant increases because of that population of offenders?
Mr. Chair, the influence of drug offenders in our prison population will continue long into the future. The enhanced sentencing and mandatory minimum sentencing of drug offenders certainly adds, and that's a problem nationwide. And you have heard Attorney General Holder and President Obama talk about the wise use of federal resources when it comes to low-level drug offenders, and we do feel that other strategies for those offenders can affect prison population. Drug court would be a perfect example.
Very good. Dr. Dewey, closing statement.
Mr. Chair, just one additional point to what Commissioner Roy said is when it comes to drug offenders, that we have seen a recent increase in new court commitment admissions for meth, but it is qualitatively different from what we saw in the previous decade, where we saw a lot of offenders coming into prison for manufacturing, which carried very lengthy sentences. They're more likely to be in prison for possession for possession of meth than they were then. So even though the sentences are shorter, we're still, when we see an increase in new court commitment admissions, these are offenders who still have longer sentences than probation violators or release violators.
Very good. Thank you both for your presentation. And members, if you could keep that OLA report in your file, we'll take that up at our next hearing. Thank you. This meeting's adjourned.